Welcome back to Rockstock Channel. It is Wednesday, April 24th. Over the past 2 years, Lithium Rush, the RK Equity Scoreboard, has grown from some 50 companies to over 150. It's been hard to keep up with all the new listings in 2022 and 2023, but as the dust settles in lithium equity land over the course of 2024, Rodney and I have been reaching out and getting to know a number of these new stories and picking some we think you might also like to get to know. Next up is Brunswick Exploration, presented by CEO Killian Charles. To be clear, Rodney and I are not strategic advisors to nor invested in Brunswick Exploration. And of course, we are not financial advisors, and nothing in this video should be considered investment advice. Please do your own research and read the disclaimer at the end of this video. Note that a written summary of this interview will be published in the next edition of RK Equities Lithium Ion Bull. Please register your email at rkequity.com if you'd like to receive this newsletter directly to your email box. And please make sure to like this video, subscribe to Rockstock Channel, and leave a question or comment below. What do you think of Killian and Brunswick's prospects? What other companies might you be interested to hear from on this channel? You can also email Rodney and me at our new email address, rockstockchannel@rkequity.com. As always, I'll begin each Getting to Know You episode with a summary synopsis of some key company attributes. Looking at the RK Equity scoreboard, Brunswick trades on the Toronto Venture Exchange, ticker symbol BRW, and on the U.S. OTCQB exchange, ticker symbol BRWXF. Brunswick has a market cap of approximately 86 million Canadian or 66 million U.S. dollars. The company has several hard rock exploration projects in various provinces throughout Canada, but the company's primary focus is on the James Bay region of Quebec. Brunswick shares are currently trading around 44 cents, and the company has raised approximately $20 million Canadian in total over the past 2 years. The current cash balance is about $12 million Canadian as of December 31st, 2023. The last capital raise was in October 2023, $5 million at $1.15, which followed a $9.5 million raise last March at 85 cents and a $5.5 million raise in December 2020 in the 40 cent range where it is today. Red Cloud and Canaccord Genuity have largely been responsible for their financings, and Red Cloud's Alina Islam covers Brunswick stock. Brunswick has a fairly tight share register backed by a 10% stake from Osisko, and with company insiders holding another 35% and a single family office holding 18%. Brunswick has an active social media presence. You can find them on X at Brunswick EXPLO1 and on LinkedIn. And don't forget, you could find Rodney and me on X at RodneyHooper13 and at Lithium Ion Bull. And with that, welcome, Killian Charles, to Rockstock Channel for the first time. We had the pleasure of meeting you, and I moderated a panel at 1-to-1 conference last November. You know, Rodney was on that panel, and it was great to hear that story. And we had earlier had a Zoom call with you, I think. But please tell our viewers a bit about your background, not just your Irish, heritage in Quebec, if you kind of can detect that accent in this discussion. But obviously your career background and how Brunswick got started and Osisko funding and your plans from here, and then Rodney will go into more detailed questions.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Howard. It was a great panel when we in London. I think there was some interesting subjects that were discussed there and that follow true from what you discussed back then. Look. You know, Brunswick Exploration, we'll start off with that. It's a fairly simple story, right? Our view was a few years ago, back in roughly 2020, that lithium exploration was lacking, or at least in North America was accidental. There was never a real sustained exploration approach across the entire country. Everything that we had known on the lithium side was found while looking for another commodity. Be it gold, be it copper, be it zinc. And so our view was always that there was a large amount of new discoveries that were going to happen. So starting even in 2020, we took a deeper dive in terms of lithium hard rock deposits, because we felt that that was something that was well understood. We tried to understand what makes a lithium mine tick. And what quickly highlighted to us was obviously infrastructure, simple metallurgy. You know, you want to focus on spodumene mineralization, avoid petalite, avoid lepidolite as much as possible. And you want to make sure that, again, from a metallurgical perspective, you're dealing with large, you know, on-spec concentrate, right? So you want large spodumene crystals with very low impurity levels. And so we went ahead, armed with this fact, this knowledge, and proceeded to explore across all of Kando. You know, I think back then in 2020, we knew there was lithium across Kando, but we didn't realize the impact that James Bay was going to have. And so we staked across the James Bay, we staked across Ontario, the Atlantic provinces, you know, New Brunswick, Nova Scotia, Newfoundland. We did Ontario, Manitoba, Saskatchewan. We really scoured across the entire country. And then we proceeded to churn through as many targets as possible. Our view was exploration is a tough game. Let's make it into a numbers game, right? If I start with more opportunities of making discoveries, I fundamentally improve my odds of actually making that discovery. So from day one, we took on a rather large portfolio. And it scared a lot of people, because never before had a junior gone so aggressively in terms of exploration across the entire country. But we were quite confident in our strategy, because we knew exploration is not about being able to say yes quickly. It's about being able to say no very, very fast. And that's what we learned. We learned that when it comes to lithium exploration, we can be efficient. We can deploy certain tools that allow us to say no quite rapidly. And so from the very large portfolio, we are quickly whittling down to our top priorities. And it so happens that they're all in the James Bay. That's how it works sometimes. You know, James Bay is showing to be an absolutely world-class environment for lithium discoveries. All right. When you take a step back and we have that perspective, you can truly appreciate that the type of deposits, the size and scale of deposits that are being found in the James Bay look nothing like the ones in Ontario, Manitoba, and Saskatchewan. You are an order of magnitude larger in the James Bay. More research, I'm sure, is going to explain why. But for now, that's where we, as you mentioned, we are focused. We have made a discovery. It's not even been a year yet. Our Mirage discovery, which we've obviously done a round of drilling last year, a round of drilling this year again, and we will absolutely be back later in the summer and throughout the rest of the year. But we are focused on making discoveries. And that ties into the DNA of the team that we've built inside Brunswick, ties into the DNA of the board and myself. You know, everyone involved in this group has either found mines or built mines or analyzed them, have spent times on that front. I'm a geopipe background. I spent time in capital markets as a sell-side equity analyst, looking at a plethora of projects, transition into a multitude of companies that I like, whether it was Integra, which was sold to Eldorado, then helped out on Osisko Metals, which we then subsequently sold a project to Appian, one of the largest private equity groups in the world. My board, my executive chairman is Robert Wares, one of the founders of the Osisko Group, who has been involved in a large amount of discoveries, whether it's Canadian Malartic itself with the rest of the Osisko team, Arizona Mining with Hermosa down in Arizona, Augusta, just wave after wave of discoveries. And that's our background. We are here to discover mines, not just lithium. It's great that we find lithium, but ultimately we are trying to find lithium mines. And so that's really important for us, because it really permeates across our entire exploration strategy, where if we don't see scale, if we don't see size, if we don't see metallurgy, if we don't see accessibility, then for us, it's not going to be a mine. And that's how we explore across our entire portfolio. And now even on an international basis, you know, we're now pushing into Greenland of all places, areas that no one's ever even thought about exploring, but, you know, it has all the right ingredients, right on tide water. And why not? Why not continue pushing on that front?
Great. Thanks for that start, Killian. Can you just, to get everyone up to speed, the listeners, give us the milestones that were achieved in 2023?
Absolutely. You know, 2023 is definitely the time when we kick this strategy into high gear. I'll be honest, we had difficulty believing that we could be this efficient when it came to exploration, that we could eliminate targets in a matter of minutes. And once we had proven that to ourselves in 2022, we went very aggressive in 2023. That's at the point where we expanded our portfolio across several other jurisdictions. What Howard had mentioned, we then went proceed and raise a significant amount of capital. And we then launched one of the largest lithium grassroots exploration campaigns in the world. You know, we had up to 4 helicopters, you know, half a dozen teams scouring the entire country and just knocking off province after province. And then in June of 2023, we landed for the first time at Mirage. We had to evacuate 24 hours later due to the forest fires, but we had already made a discovery by then. We knew we wanted to come back. By August, when we could access the field once more in Quebec, we had subsequently made 3 discoveries. We confirmed that Mirage was what we believe a significant asset. We made a discovery, new grassroots discovery at Elron, and made a new grassroots discovery at our Anitikau project, which is only 22 kilometers away from Arcadium's future James Bay mine. So it was focused on exploration, making those numbers, making that numbers game work for us. And the fact that we were able to do significant discoveries in the span of what amounts to weeks, all right, really highlights our strategy and highlights the benefit of our strategy. And then after making that mirage, seeing what we had found, we immediately proceeded into a drill campaign, which we started releasing assays late into 2023 and early into 2024. It was only initial 5,000 meters. We were starting to define a significant dike field where, you know, you're seeing high grade and, you know, quite appreciable widths right at surface. You know, everything that we've drilled up at Mirage, we haven't even gone below 100 meters from surface. It's quite exciting just how fast that one is moving.
So you did your first campaign at Mirage, and that was a success with the intercepts and grades, and you've launched a second drill campaign that's ongoing. When can we expect some assay results from that program, and how are they going to look?
Look, we expect to see assay results coming out of that extremely shortly. I'm sure by the time this video is online and I'm talking about them, they'll already be out there. But at the same time, for us, more than anything else, it's about confirming the potential at Mirage. That was the whole objective of the winter campaign. We wanted to demonstrate, we wanted to follow up on what was left to be drilled, to be quite honest. We hadn't even finished drilling all of our outcrops. Remember, we were back in the field in August. After the forest fires, we were drilling by September. It has been very, very short. And to see so much success so rapidly in our mind speaks to the potential of the asset. And so what we wanted to do with this second wave, many areas, we've only put a single hole. The last drill hole that we had released was 38 meters at 1.8%. And there was essentially one drill pad into it where we kind of popped 3 quick holes there. And it was open in all directions. And so we wanted to obviously expand around that because it starts in mineralization. It actually, we don't even know how big it is because we haven't even actually had a chance to step back from it. Based on our targets, we just, you know, starting at, you know, depth 0 underneath the till cover, boom, right into the pegmatite. It really is something that is exciting, that we want to keep growing. We will absolutely, you know, be releasing quite significant results over the coming weeks here as we receive assays. And we will absolutely be coming back into the field here to do more prospecting. There's definitely more work that needs to be done around Mirage just on that front, but as well to continue growing these targets that we're defining. Again, we're looking for mines, and we really believe that Mirage has a very strong chance of being that mine.
And Killian, what is the total meterage that you're drilling in this second campaign?
So we'll probably have knocked out roughly around 7,000 meters in this second campaign. We're still targeting to do 15,000 meters. It was just been slower go throughout the year, but we will absolutely be back there expanding from the 7,000 meters we've done.
You've also now initiated a drill campaign at the Elrond project that looks prospective. Given the Arwen spodumene-bearing pegmatite discovered there late last year, when are you hoping to get some results out of that campaign?
We'll probably have assays later in May coming out on that campaign. And really, it speaks to our strategy, right? Our view is, let's start with a large base of assets. If we identify spodumene there, then it immediately moves to drilling, right? Every time we will find spodumene, I will put a drill rig on it and I will drill it. Because to be quite honest, it is hard to understand what you see at surface and how it correlates to what you see at depth, all right? Even our last drill hole, MR6 at Mirage, to go back to Mirage, we were targeting three outcrops that were about 4 meter wide, and then we drilled 38 meters, right? So it's hard to see, and the only way you can do it is with the Troop machine drilling. So our view is, we make a discovery, we drill it, and then we ask our next question. All right, based on this drilling, do we believe it's going to be a mine? Right? That's the next steps we're going to do. So I'm going to drill Anitikal. I'm going to drill that showing that we discovered there June last year. I will absolutely go out there and drill it, because we don't know until we've actually gone there and done the work. So it's always a question of moving these assets and then asking ourselves the question, is it going to be a mine? If Elrond does not show up to be better than Mirage, then there's no point in me advancing that asset. I can look to monetize it, but it has to be as good. That's the new floor. And that's the advantage with the way we're working, is that for very cheaply, we can continue in the background working all of these other discoveries that we've made and that hopefully we will continue to make, and see how they shake up against that sort of star asset in our portfolio. And it really is something that doesn't really exist, in my mind anyway, in a lot of other companies. The team that we've built from an exploration perspective, very few teams have seen as many pegmatites as my team has. Very few teams have had the chance to look at so many jurisdictions and to land on them and to identify spodumene as my team has. And so this is something that I want to continue leveraging. That's what exploration is all about. That's why junior mining is all about. It's about making discoveries. And that's what I want to keep doing as much as possible.
It's fair to say then that Mirage is likely to be your priority for 2024 and beyond, unless something proves up to be even more prospective.
I mean, I like to say that that's a Hollywood problem. If I find something that's better than Mirage, then I've done really well for myself. Let's put it that way. And I think the team can pat themselves on the back. Just having Mirage, to me, speaks to the success of our strategy. Companies would kill to have just one success, one chance at having something real. And I believe that that's what we have in the Mirage asset. I think the more drilling we're going to do, the more we're going to demonstrate that. But even beyond that, even beyond this singular discovery there that we were putting and we're focusing on, I think there's still so much more to give. That's why, as you mentioned, yes, it will absolutely be our focus. I'm going to put a lot of meters into it. I'm going to put a lot of capital, a lot of energy, and a significant portion of my team into there. But I want to remind you, we have a team that has seen more pegmatites than almost anyone else has. So I'm going to keep leveraging that. It's going to be in the background. It's not going to be at the forefront. investors don't need to worry too much about it. They can focus on Mirage, but I'm going to keep leveraging it. I'm going to keep advancing something that, you know, not a lot of other groups, not a lot of companies have out there. And because I really believe in about a few years' time, probably 12 to 24 months, quite short, we will have found, we as an industry, will have found most of the lithium showings around the world. I really adamantly believe that. With the type of success, you know, you mentioned it, Howard mentioned it. When he went from 50 to 150 in his chart. That's outrageous. You don't have that in copper. You don't have that in gold. You don't have so many companies jump up so rapidly. I think it speaks to this generational opportunity that you guys have done a fantastic job of highlighting that exists in lithium, where there's significant new discoveries being made by a large swath of companies that you just don't see in other commodities. That's what makes it so exciting. And so when it ties back to the work that we want to do, I keep saying to myself every single morning, I don't want to miss it. I don't want to look in 5 years' time and say, geez, I wish we would push a little bit harder. We were onto something here. We had the team. And instead of pushing a little bit harder, seeing a little bit more what we can do for so cheap, we abandoned it and we just focused on one thing. And look, that's fine. But we want to push the envelope, right? We want to do something. We want to do more. We know we can do more. We know we can do more at Mirage. We know we can do more in our portfolio. We know we can push boundaries. Again, Labrador, Mirage, these are areas that no one has even ever bothered to think about lithium. Everyone goes to the same places before, and we reject that. We know there's more discoveries to be made. Won't say it'll be me. I hope it is. I'm biased. Of course, I hope it. I will be the ones doing it. But, you know, I'm quite confident that this industry has still so much more to give on that front. So much more to give on the exploration front.
Killian, I guess the other thing that's really important to go along with all of these is infrastructure. So how would you compare the available infrastructure at Mirage with Elrond and the other prospective projects that you've got in your portfolio?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, infrastructure is, again, I mentioned it before and I'm going to emphasize it again. We're looking for lithium mines, right? We're not just looking for lithium. Looking for lithium is fun, but there's huge swaths of the country that even though I really, really love and I truly believe a world-class asset will be found there, I just can't square away infrastructure. And lithium is a bulk commodity. You know, you're moving 94% waste. And that has a huge impact in how a company needs to look at this space. And when I look at the consolidation that happened in Australia, in Western Australia, and I look at the consolidation that may happen in North America, I say to myself, the number one priority for any major company that wants to move into the space is going to, they're going to look at the full picture. They're going to say to themselves, great, but how am I making money off of this? How am I moving that concentrate to where it needs to be? So we gave ourselves a rather, you know, a constraint, not a huge constraint, but it's still a sizable constraint that we want it to be 50 kilometers from infrastructure, be it as low as tidewater, as great as rail, and everything in between. So road, power, we need to be able to point to some type of infrastructure because Canada has seen many great discoveries die for generations due to lack of infrastructure. You know, there's a great one, Izok Lake, beautiful VMS out in the Northwest Territories, middle of nowhere, never will it be built. And so there's a bunch of projects that I just struggle to wrap my head around because it's 200 kilometers from infrastructure. And I say to myself, how's that going to work? How's that ever going to be a mine? It's going to cost you more to build the road there, the power there, than it's actually ever going to cost you to mine anything, to extract anything. And so, you know, when we went to Greenland, a lot of people were like, Killian, you're crazy. Greenland? And I almost wanted to laugh and say, do you realize that often from an infrastructure perspective, it can even be better than the James Bay? Don't get me wrong. We're in an area that's fantastic. The Trans-Taiga is about 40 kilometers away. You know, you have significant amount of hydroelectrical power. You have a district. And that's something that's important. You have a district that's forming between Winsome and Patriot. These are all, you know, fantastic assets, world-class in the case of Patriot, that you can justify, any mining company can justify the infrastructure. because you're now building a district, just like an iron ore district in Western Australia. You can justify spending a significant amount of capital. And then when I looked at Greenland, I mean, I'm on tide water. Every single one of the projects we staked is right on tide water. And once it's on a boat, it can go wherever it wants to go. It can go out to Europe. It can go to North America. It can go to China. You've, you know, done your hardest part, which is getting it to the cheapest form of transportation out there, which is frankly a boat. So that's where it becomes really interesting. And that's where, again, I mentioned it's part of our DNA and how we explore. You know, we're not just looking for lithium. We're looking for lithium mines. And I find that something that is important to distinguish ourselves from many of our peers.
That's great. So you've got cash in the bank, how I'd mentioned earlier, but you've got an extensive exploration portfolio and drilling programs on the go. At what point are you likely to need additional capital? How much runway do you have with cash in the bank at the moment?
Yeah, so look, runway is something that's foremost in our mind. You know, we do have strong shareholder support. That's fine from existing investors. That's perfect. We do have opportunities, if you will, in front of us. But, you know, it's we have to make sure that the dollars coming in have a positive impact on the overall company. There's no point in raising to raise, and there's no point in diluting to dilute. I think that's silly. You know, we take it in 3-month increments. We look at our plan and we think about where could we have the most impact for our dollars. Frankly, the most expensive thing I can do is, as always, like in any of your companies, drilling, right? When I'm drilling, that's when I'm using up the most capital. Prospecting is something that is frankly unimaginably cheap on a per target basis. So that's something that, you know, fundamentally, the budget doesn't really move up or down too much on that front. And so our view is, all right, how do I advance this? If I'm looking at a stock price that's too low, that's just inordinate amount of dilution, maybe it's bringing on a partner, maybe either project, corporate. These are all things that we can explore. But I want to make sure that if we're advancing Brunswick and we bring in capital, it is capital that is not just beneficial to the company, it's capital that is beneficial to existing shareholders as well as the new ones coming in. All right. We're trying to always create a scenario that's winning, that's win-win for everyone involved inside Brunswick.
Okay. So in terms of at your current sort of run rate and spend, you know, how, what's your time horizon on that?
Yeah. We're fine for this summer. We're absolutely, I'm not worried for the, like, we can go ahead, we can go back in drilling, we can do our prospecting, that's all fine. But at the same time, I don't want to be in a position where, you know, we're running too tight, where the cash balance and everyone's going to expect the financing. It's something that I find is silly. So we're just trying to manage things in a correct fashion. If it means I go a little bit slower, I'll go a little bit slower. That's fine. But I want to make sure that we're always in a position of strength here. And having no cash for a junior, let me tell you, that's not a position of strength.
Absolutely. And I mean, you've used successfully, you've used flow through funding in the past. Can you give us an idea? I mean, it's a fantastic thing. I think that's very beneficial to exploration companies in Canada. Can you give us some sort of idea of the types of share price premiums that can be achieved if you use flow through funding?
Yeah, so there's two types of flow through funding. There's the straight flow through, and then there's another one, charity. But depending on what type of flow through you are using, premiums can vary anywhere from, say, 25 to almost over 100% premium. So it depends on the company, depends on the project. Better companies get better premiums. You know, companies that have a tougher place in the market get, you know, a lower premium. We've always been able to attract a very, very strong premium for our company. I think it speaks to the quality of the team. I think it speaks to the quality of our portfolio and the quality of our strategy as well.
And given that if it has to be used with exploration, I mean, it's certainly something that you can utilize in the future again.
Oh, absolutely. It's 100%. That's why I love it as a program, because it forces companies to be honest and actually spend it on where they're supposed to spend it and do the work that they said they're going to do, right? And that's something that we believe in. We try to make sure that as much of our capital goes into the ground. That's how you build real long-term value, is by spending as much as you of it as you can directly into your assets.
And recently, you came out with an announcement that you'd signed an agreement to allow you to repurchase, I think it was 0.5% net smelter royalty on certain of the Mirage claims. You've secured the right and the terms. I see there was cash and share flexibility before releasing the results of another, you know, winter drilling campaign. Can you please just elaborate on those terms and how you can optimize against cash and share dilution?
Absolutely. So our view there was, again, clean up assets. You know, it's in the details, as I like to say, right? Even last year, and I'll come back and answer your question properly, but bear with me for a second. Even last year, people were confused as to why we did the one mineral deal. And one of the main justification for us was even from a mineability perspective. Some of the discoveries that we had made, we felt were kind of close to our property boundaries that we had done. And so it was really important for us that if there's something real here, if I'm going to start designing pits and pads and infrastructure, I need space. I need space for that mine infrastructure that I'm putting in. The amount of times I've seen projects fail to understand this concept because the mineralization is right on their property boundary or near their property boundary, and then the pit shape from the open pit mine ends up being funky and missing out on ore is a huge problem. And so that's from the get-go, we try to incorporate that. And so again, devil's in the detail. We knew there was a royalty there. That was an extra burden. And so our view is let's continue cleaning these assets, trying to make sure that they have the strongest financial position. So if I had an opportunity to buy back a royalty on this asset, absolutely we jump on it. 100% we wanted to jump on it. And so here was an area where we could buy back a 0.5 existing royalty and drive forward on that and just eliminate a burden on the asset so that we can ensure that we retain most of the value inside Brunswick.
And I looked just to touch again on the terms. I see you can, I think there was a minimum of 25% cash, but above that you could do cash or shares.
Absolutely. So again, flexibility, everything that we try to do, you can look at all our previous transactions. They all fall under that same boat where we're trying to give ourselves that flexibility to make the right decisions. You know, if I'm using capital that is more expensive than my current share price, then it doesn't make a lot of sense. Why would I not use another tool, right? So we're trying to balance this as best as we can so that we're never in a position where we either have to deplete the cash balance because now we're in a position where we're not able to raise capital. We can still continue to make those payments in shares instead, or vice versa. If cash is abundant, then maybe we wanna, you know, avoid, albeit minor, but still avoid dilution. Again, it's about having that flexibility in front of us.
And Killian, you know, Quebec always rates highly on the mining attractiveness and location and so on. How has your experience been operating in Quebec?
Look, I think Quebec would rate number one on a global basis, number one or number two, if it wasn't for the fact that, you know, we speak French over here. I think the language barrier plays a role in it. And I'm not going to lie that Fraser Institute is known for not really liking Quebec too much. But at the end of the day, when you look at the support, when you look at the tools available to investors, to companies in Quebec, it is simply unparalleled. The singular best geological database in the world is the one that covers Quebec. It's unbeatable. You will not find a single jurisdiction that has as much mining geological information available to anyone as Quebec. You're not going to find funds, provincial funds, looking to invest in mining companies like you do in Quebec, anywhere else in the world. You're not going to find organization, government groups, First Nations that are supportive of mining like you do in Quebec. It is shockingly, look, I've explored, I've looked, I've walked all over the world. Nothing compares to Quebec. Absolutely nothing. And so to have, you know, so many lithium discoveries be made in this province, to have a lithium district be built in this area, you can take that to cash. Like, it will happen. You will see Patriot Battery Metals build Corvette. You will see Winsome build Adina. And hopefully you will see Brunswick build Mirage. These are assets that will happen. You will see Rio Tinto invest in this province. You'll see Albemarle. You'll see Arcadium. Every single player in the space is sniffing, looking, staking, negotiating in Quebec. This is going to be, you know, the focus for the North American battery complex. This is where all the ore is going to be sourced here. I think, Howard, you said it best last year. I attended one of your talks, and you said something that struck with me. You know, the lithium triangle for Americans, forget South America. It's the Eastern Seaboard, Quebec, and Ontario. And every day I look at it, and I see it being, you know, proven every single day. It's going to be true, and it's going to be incredible.
The North American Lithium Triangle. Thank you, Killian, for helping me, have that catch on as a lithium thematic.
No, I push it all the time. It is absolutely the reality. It's absolutely the reality. When you see what's being built and the amount of infrastructure investment and upstream, downstream on the lithium side, it's something quite significant.
So we probably found your music video for you. We can do Sinead O'Connor's Nothing Compares to You.
I was thinking exactly the same
when
thing,
said,
Rodney.
Nothing compares. I thought nothing compares to you.
I turned on my video.
Love it.
So, Killian, if I can wrap off on my side, major milestones for 2024 that you would recommend that investors keep an eye out for and that are going to be major catalysts for the company and the share?
Look, the major catalyst at the end of the day is going to be Mirage. It's what we're focused on. It's what we want to deliver results. So drill, baby, drill. That's what it's going to boil down to. Results, metallurgical work, you know, the fun things. Well, maybe metallurgy is a little bit more boring, but hopefully there's no metallurgists in the audience. The fun things when it comes to exploration. And then in the background, we're going to keep going. We're going to keep exploring. We're going to look at all these areas. Maybe something else surfaces that we want to drill, just like we drill Elrond, just like we're going to drill Anitacao in the second half of this year. But again, we're here to do exploration. That's what we're, it's our purpose in life.
Okay, Killian, thank you very much for joining us and being one of the first to participate in our Getting to Know You series. We look forward to following up with you, I guess, sometime later in the summer after you have more drill results from Mirage. And, hopefully this 40-cent stock will be a Mirage and you'll be closer to where you raised your last capital, you know, in the 80 and $1.15 range. Fingers crossed on that. You know, the backdrop is a bit better, you know, following Tesla's announcement yesterday. And let's see if, we can get some rallying in spodumene prices and sentiment lifting back to where it was a few months ago in lithium. Thanks again, Killian.
Hey, look, we're all in this together, whether we want to or not. We all need to help each other as much as we can.
Kumbaya to that, my friend.
Cheers, guys.